From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
We're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area about takeaways from the Wisconsin primary election last week as we move into the general. And before the break, we were talking a bit about Dan's piece in the New York Times about Mandela Barnes and what he represents. And Dan, it's that significance of what he represents from a generational standpoint, I think more than makes up for this attack that Ron Johnson and others are launching at him now that his resume is somehow thin. Now, set aside how disingenuous that is, given that Ron Johnson's political experience was zero when he got elected to the U.S. Senate. What is it that Mandela brings to the campaign that overcomes whatever thinness might be in that resume?
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, for one, I think that criticism is a difficult one when you have Mandela Barnes, who became the first Black lieutenant governor in the state's history at the age of 31. I think that's a pretty significant accomplishment. But also, I think there's going to be a distinct generational component to this race where I think Johnson has, you know, he has been an obstructionist in a lot of ways in the Senate. And he has stood in the way of progress in a lot of ways in the Senate. And I think younger generations want to see more urgency. They want to see more action. And I think that's the type of thing that Barnes can bring to this. Is, you know, he has put wanting to eliminate the filibuster front and center in his campaign. And I think most millennials who have come of age in a time of crisis, whether it's the 9/11 and the Iraq War, whether it's the Great Recession, whether it's the pandemic, you know, people want to see more urgent action from Congress. And I think that's going to be a part of it as well. And I think Barnes also, you know, just with the representation factor, he will represent millennials in Congress in a way that they are not being represented right now. You know, the Senate, as it's currently constructed, is the oldest it has ever been. There are one third of the members are over the age of 70, and there are roughly as many members in their 80s as there are under the age of 50. So there needs to be more representation to speak to this, you know, this generation who has come of age in crisis and wants to see more urgent action on climate change, on healthcare, on so many issues. So I think that is going to be a huge part of this campaign. Is that generational divide between a 35-year-old Black millennial and a 67-year-old two-term Republican senator.
And what also I think bodes well for Mandela Barnes is that the Republican Party in Wisconsin and elsewhere remains quite fractured. I mean, you know, the cliche is always Democrats in disarray. But, you know, you note in three different ways, Robin Voss nearly lost, Adam Jarko lost, and of course, Tim Time is no longer a thing here in Wisconsin, because you have that party that I certainly don't, I'm not saying that, you know, every Republican voter is going to stay home. I'm not saying that by any stretch of the imagination. This is not a unified party heading into the general.
No, it is not. And you saw some of those fractures in the primary, particularly like with Clayfish losing, with Voss almost losing, which I didn't even think it would be close for that one. So I think, you know, they keep debating themselves over the 2020 election. And I think, you know, Tim Michaels in his speech with Donald Trump said election integrity was his number one issue. And then a week later after the election, he said jobs and the economy is his number one issue. Mm-hmm. So it remains to be seen if the Clayfish camp, if the Voss camp will get behind Michaels in as much of a way as they might have with Clayfish. But I think you also have to recognize the reality of the midterm dynamics. And the reality of the midterm dynamics is the party opposite the president does well in the midterms every time. The only exception to that over the past 30 years was in 2002, when President George W. Bush's approval rating was sky high after 9/11. So I think you have to recognize the reality of that, and I think, you know, Republicans in a swing state like Wisconsin are going to be favored in a lot of these 50-50 races. But I think the dynamic that I kind of alluded to in the piece and I am seeing in this race is this might not be your typical midterm election year for a number of reasons. So
I definitely believe that for, yes, a host of reasons. And that schism in the party, you know, was put on display even more than we thought it was. It wasn't just Trump versus Pence in terms of Clefish and Michaels. But then, you know, late that night and then throughout the rest of the week, it was put on display as Voss versus Gabelman. Which, you know, then the week ended with Voss letting Gabelman go. And Voss initially said he was going to have a, you know, maybe a meeting of the Republican caucus and decide on this. And then he said, well, I've talked to enough people on the phone and elsewhere, and I'm just going to fire him on his own. Did you expect that to happen earlier, like Wednesday or Thursday, or that Voss would, you know, bite his lip and let Gabelman continue to operate?
I thought he would let Gabelman continue to operate, because I think one of the things that has stood out in some of the Marquette polling this year is the polling on enthusiasm. And, you know, they'll identify that there's an enthusiasm gap between Republicans and Democrats, and the Republicans have more enthusiasm for this. But among those enthusiastic Republicans, the most enthusiastic Republicans are people who are most fired up about the lie of a stolen election. So I think you risk alienating the base voters of the pro-Trump election denying base voters in Wisconsin, of which there are obviously many. I mean, I think the majority of members of the state legislature at this point have paid lip service to wanting to overturn the 2020 election results. And so I think you had to have some sort of political calculation there for Voss. I don't know. Were you surprised as well? I'm trying to get some reaction to this from people, but.
Well, I'll be honest enough to say that I'd gone a little too far one way, and it probably simply from A, being in the legislature, and B, you know, maybe I was secretly hoping for some drama. But when Voss mentioned that he was going to have a caucus, I asked a few of our guests last week if perhaps Voss might be in for an unpleasant surprise, that he might actually get in that caucus meeting and think, okay, let's get Gabelman out of here. And that enough people would say, you know, actually, Robin, we don't have confidence in you anymore. And I mean, I'm still going to tell you, I don't know if maybe that was part of the calculation why there wasn't a caucus this week, that he simply, you know, claimed to have talked to enough members and did it by phone. I don't know how strong Voss is standing in that caucus is and what it will be like come January, whatever the result.
Yeah, I think Voss, as we've seen so many times in Wisconsin politics, is very petty, is very vindictive. Mm-hmm. And I think he's doing this not because of any other reason, but the fact that Gabelman campaigned against him. That's the only reason.
Oh, yeah. I mean, without that, we wouldn't see this at all. I want to leave time to talk with Dan Schaefer about the third congressional district and how important it is. But I'm going to jump ahead again to something that probably is not talked about much up north, but again, because of my own background, I want to bring this up to folks. And that is a couple of Democratic socialists who have won races in the Milwaukee area. And the reason I want to bring this up with Dan is he does a masterful job of explaining how Milwaukee, the largest cog in the state's economic engine, is vilified, demonized, punished like no other big city is by its state legislature, and that something was going to have to change in terms of, you know, what Milwaukee voters were going to do. And so when you hear, wait, they're electing Democratic socialists in Milwaukee, I mean, they're just not doing politics as usual. And that certainly came out in the case of candidate Darren Madison Jr., who topped Glendale Mayor Brian Kennedy, you know, a white suburban candidate on the Democratic side. So, Dan, I mean, just give our listeners briefly just how badly, you know, Milwaukee is hurting because of the legislature, and whether you thought that might have played a role in these primaries.
Yeah, I think it's a huge, huge factor of just Milwaukee's response to a lot of these legislative races and things like that, because the state legislature has just constantly defunded and demonized Milwaukee. The city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County are facing major, major budget shortfalls over the next several years because of the way the state legislature has cut shared revenue and eliminated options for local control. And so I think there are a number of factions and coalitions within Milwaukee that are starting to form, that are starting to find different ways to push back against this. And so I think Darren Madison is an interesting example because he was an organizer with the African-American Roundtable and was endorsed by BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, and had aligned with the Democratic Socialist Group in Milwaukee. And so he was also endorsed by David Bowen, who was the previous, current representative in that 10th Assembly District. So I think there's some interesting coalitions are emerging in Milwaukee. And so we will see most likely two Democratic Socialists in the legislature next year. The other being Ryan Clancy, who ran unopposed in the primary for the seat that is going to be vacated by Jonathan Brostoff, who is going to the Milwaukee Common Council. And Ryan Clancy has been a representative in the Milwaukee County Board. He's actually gotten some really interesting legislation passed there as well, one giving a right to counsel for people who are evicted. So I think, you know, you're seeing some interesting actions on the local level that with the few resources that Milwaukee is allowed to try and really make a difference for people.
And Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area is joining us. And I want to end with, you know, I'm looking at something far away from me down in Milwaukee. And now I want to see how you, being in Milwaukee, view what's happening in the 3rd Congressional District in Western and part of Central Wisconsin with Republican Derek Van Orden, who was, I like to say, insurrection adjacent, facing off now with State Senator Brad Paff. And we know what a 50-50 district is, and we know what the midterm trends are like. But What is your view of it from your corner of the state?
Yeah, I think, it's going to be the most competitive congressional race by far because of how redistricting is in Wisconsin and the fact that, Republicans are going to control a majority of the congressional districts in the state. But I think this is a particularly interesting one with Ron Kind retiring, you know, in the 2020 election. Kind obviously won, but that was a district that Trump carried as well. So it is kind of one of those swing regions. We saw kind of shift from Obama to Trump in recent years. I thought it was, you know, I didn't get to follow it that closely, but it seemed like a pretty interesting primary. And Brad Paff, you know, he won a pretty close election in 2020 that was crucial to saving Governor Evers' veto. And so I think it's going to be quite the contrast. There's so many really stark contrasts between candidates in so many races. And I think Brad Paff and Derek Van Orden, who is an unhinged insurrectionist, is going to be something else.
Well, I mean, again, it's that whole notion of this is a state that gave us Joseph McCarthy, you know, but it also gave us Gaylord Nelson and the La Follettes. The contrasts here are just, no wonder the New York Times wanted to hear from you and have at least some kind of an explanation of how these things work. If people want to hear more from you on a more regular basis, how do people reach the Recombobulation Area? How do they best read what you're doing?
Yeah, you can. The Recombobulation Area is a weekly newsletter that publishes on Substack. So you can subscribe to get that newsletter for free in your inbox. You could also become a paid subscriber to help fund the work that we do. We're growing. We're aiming to do more and more over the next few months and on into the future here. So, and you can also, of course, find me on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, where I'm occasionally tweeting about things other than the Bucks.
I don't know, man. I need your 15-second analysis. How should we feel heading into the season here?
I'm excited. We've got Giannis. Chris Middleton's coming back. We're going to be good.
Okay. That's all we needed to hear. Chris Middleton is back. So we'll go from there. Dan, this was such a pleasure. Thanks. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. Have a great day. Dan Schaefer, again, from the Recombobulation Area. We will take a break. We will wrap up this hour's conversation in just a moment. You're up north. I'm a summer, I don't know.